Hi, I'm Spencer.
And I'm Blake.
And you're about to get jumped.
Welcome to episode 81 of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, a weekly podcast where we watch the anime so you don't have to.
But you should still totally watch the anime.
This week on Get Jumped, we're watching Hunter x Hunter, episodes 76 through 78, where Gon's dad thinks friends are for losers, Banana is a totally normal first name, and ants are the most dangerous animals around.
Well, they're the most dangerous animals around if you discount the crocodiles that are mixed with bats, that are mixed with rats, that are also mixed with spiders. You know the ones. They live down in your sores and they're waiting to attack you the next time you go poop, you know.
I know I'm never pooping again, so
anyways, let's jump in.
That's a weird one.
Hey everybody, we are back this week with Hunter x Hunter.
You're and welcome.
Before we get started today, there has been some big news that is going to be less big news to people next week, because you have all been talking about it today. We recorded this episode on Thursday, so
you've got
most people
three days before
definitely
you hear
this. Read about it already.
Yeah,
but
it's the big new. News.
The big news is that they've released the cast list for the four leads of the Cowboy Bebop animated series, which
I thought it was live action.
Yeah, the live action series. Sorry about that.
Oh, this is on Netflix. We talked about it a little while ago.
Yeah. So the live action series, I'm just going to go ahead and run down the list really quick so that you can know who I'm talking about for each one of the different people. So the first one is going to be John Cho. John Cho is going to be fucking...
He's going to be Spike?
So Spike Spiegel.
Into it. I love John Cho.
Yeah, so John Cho, I had a moment today where I heard it, and my immediate thought was like, Harold and Kumar? And then I was just like, my friend Ken was sitting next to me and he was like, no, Sulu. And I was just like, yeah. That sells me a lot more on it.
He's done a lot of stuff. He did Searching too. Wasn't that John Cho?
Yeah. So the next one that is a really, really, really cool one on the list is going to be Mustafa Shakir. Mustafa Shakir, if you watch the second season of Luke Cage, he plays, I can never remember his name. It's like Huntmaster or Beastmaster. I can never remember the name of that character. But you don't really need to remember the name of the character. He is just that badass guy that plays like the crazy Jamaican guy that can't be like hurt by bullets. He is so good in that season.
Wait, and when I saw that, what show is this?
Oh, it's the second season of Luke Cage.
Oh, okay. I've seen the first season, but I haven't watched the second season yet.
Oh, yeah, he is so good.
I'm in the middle of Iron Fist right now, so that's what's happening in my life, you guys.
I'll have fun with that. they didn't say on here who he played. Damn it. The next person that's going to be on the list is going to be Daniello Pineda. I did not recognize this name. Do you know who that is?
I think I do, but this is, if you guys haven't figured out yet, this is news to me also. I had not heard of this, and Spencer's telling me this live, so.
So she was in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, so I assume that you knew.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And she was on Inside Amy Schumer. She's going to play Faye Valentine.
I knew that I recognized her name, and the reason for that is because I remember reading some interviews for Fallen Kingdom, and yeah, I know who that character is. So yeah, that's... I think that's fine casting. She definitely hasn't proven herself as much as like John Cho, but this I think is going to be a good opportunity for her to do so, because that's a really good role.
Yeah, and then the last one is going to be
like she was in the anime, which I would expect.
I really hope so as well. The way they explained it from the list was just kind of like talking about her being cryogenically frozen and all this kind of stuff, and I was like, I hope they do it correctly. But the other one that is on the list is not going to be your fourth, or fifth person that is actually riding on the Bebop. The person that they released was Alex Hassel, who is going to be the person that's playing Vicious. And so that's pretty crazy. I didn't recognize, so I didn't really recognize any of the shows that he has been on before. He's apparently going to be in an upcoming Amazon series called The Boys. And he was in The Bisexual and Genius season 2. I'm actually kind of fine, with hearing about this and not really knowing who Vicious is. Because like it, when it really comes down to it, I don't know how much time they're going to spend specifically on Vicious. And if they do it, you know, the way that the show actually is done, you know, Vicious should really only be in like 2, possibly 3 of the 10 episodes, you know?
I think they will probably expand his role and make it more of an arc that in like where things connect to him more directly. I just looked him up on IMDb, and yeah, I'm not recognizing a lot of stuff, but he's got the like picture on IMDb of him. He's got like a really sort of angular face from like the way that his cheekbones are shaped that I think are going to play well if the lighting is good, that will make him look sort of sharp and menacing. It also looks like he's got a lot of credits of the Royal Shakespeare Company, so he's a serious actor. So I'm feeling
And I'm pretty excited about it. The casting I've been digging around on as much as I possibly can today about it. I had talked to a couple of people online about it. And the best that I could find was that Watanabe is going to be he's going to be contributing to the show by having them like come to him and like consult with him. But he's not going to play like a, you know, a complete yes or no. But the way that the producers have been talking about it and the director, not the director, but the writer of the series, who wrote, or at least the first episode, he wrote, Thor Ragnarok, has talked about it is like, we're talking to him about everything, which is what you want to hear as an anime fan who really, really respects the show. A lot of people have been kind of like shitting on the choices today, with the casting, and I'm a little bit bummed out by that. Because like, yeah, they've done kind of like colorblind and inclusive casting. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm not nearly as upset about this one as some of the other ones, you know? Yeah,
it's also a far future sci-fi, which I think is much, I think far future sci-fi tends to lend itself better than any genre to colorblind casting and to especially colorblind adaptation, because it's the far future and there are no rules as according to our current society where races have specific, you know, ways in which they appear, especially in media. There's more stereotype and stuff like that, but it's like, you know, we are still very like, I don't want to say segregated because that's a specific thing, but we're definitely separated in some ways by our race in certain areas or scenarios. And, you know, far future sci-fi has the opportunity to shed those trappings and to just cast people without paying attention to that aspect of a person. And, you know, I think so. I want to piggyback here and go on a miniature diatribe about like adaptation, which is to say that, you know, I agree with you that it's good news that they are consulting with the creator of Cowboy Bebop at, like, every step of the way. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be an identical shot-for-shot remake that happens to be live action, nor should it be.
Yes, even I though, agree with that.
Yeah, so that it's not the same thing as, like, the MCU or something translating a comic story to the screen. Those are different mediums. And in this, you know, you're going to have one television series being turned into a different television series. So you could make a certain argument that they should be as similar as possible. But I'm reminded of the writers of Spider-Man Homecoming. And one of the things that they said about their writing process was that early on in the process, they sat down and they looked at all the other Spider-Man movies that had happened, because there had been 5 of them, including 2 separate series in like 15 years or something, maybe less. And they were like, one of our key goals for this was to look at what had been done and not redo it. They didn't want to retread any territory. And Homecoming is great. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be great and retread territory. But I think especially in fan communities, there's a tendency to expect a perfect recreation of what you've seen in one media representation on another. And we already don't have that with the colorblind casting. These people are not going to look like they're anime characters, which, you know, it's anime characters. That was always true. But, you know, these are fairly realistic characters, so you can get kind of close. And they decided to not worry about certain aspects of that. And I think that's a perfectly fine decision. Sounds like it's a good cast from a performance caliber standpoint. And yeah, I just urge everybody for this and all other adaptations, not go in expecting to see a shot for shot remake, but to go in appreciating the work that someone has done, translating it into a new medium or a new era or a new retelling. Like, you could argue that a shot for shot remake would be good, and it would, because the original show is good, but we already have the original show. So it's okay if this one's different, as long as it maintains the sort of true spirit of the show and the true spirit of the characters. You know, if Faye's cryogenic freezing subplot has some different elements to it, like it doesn't happen in exactly the same way, that's okay. But if it has a completely different spirit, that really needs to be earned.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know. I think it's kind of insane for people to be up in arms about this already. I think it's reasonable to be concerned because it is such a high quality show that they're trying to replicate. But I don't think they've made any missteps so far.
Yeah. The next big piece of news that actually comes from the same world of Cowboy Bebop is Watanabe is also going to be, or I guess he's already directed, Carol and Tuesday, which is going to be a Netflix animated series, and it's coming out on April 10th. Apparently, it's a worldwide release at the same time. I just heard about this today, and I was sort of like floored that I hadn't known anything about this until today.
Anime?
So I am extremely excited about it. So I am really not planning on going and sort of like digging around and like learning everything I can about it before watching it, because that's not how I experienced Cowboy Bebop, that's not how I experienced Samurai Champloo, and that's not how I'm going to experience the show. I trust the director of the show enough to go into this blind and expect to have just a good ass time. That's mostly the news that we wanted to go over.
I did remember one thing, because since we are on this Netflix kick, who I guess should be a sponsor for the show for how much we fucking talk about them. So, you know, if you're out there, Netflix. I am reminded that also the new Ultraman series came out this week. I haven't watched it or read any reviews, but it's based off of a Super Sentai series, which is what Power Rangers is based off of. And that's exciting. Maybe it's a Sentai series instead of Super Sentai. I think Super Sentai is the specific series of Power Rangers, and Ultraman was something different, I think. I don't know. Anyway, it's out now. It looks cool. I watched the trailer. So I know we mentioned that as a forthcoming project on the show a little while ago, and it has now come, and you can watch it. So there we go.
Cool. We are going to go ahead and jump into our coverage of Hunter x Hunter this week. So if we can go ahead and get a previously on Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah, we are starting a new arc today, and there's not a lot of baggage being carried over. So what you really need to know is Hunter x Hunter is set in a vast world where some people attain the title of Hunter, which is attained by going through a really complicated and dangerous process. It earns you basically a high degree of street cred wherever you go, because becoming a hunter is so difficult and life-threatening. So anybody that is a hunter has a lot of doors opened for them and earns a lot of respect sort of out of the gate. Our two main characters are both hunters. Their names are Gon and Killua. Gon is our main protagonist, and Killua is his BFF that he met early on in the series. Gon is a super optimistic, energetic kid, and Killua is his slightly more reserved best friend. They are on a quest to find Gon's father, who basically abandoned him when he was a child to go continue being a hunter. And instead of breeding, you know, resentment or enmity in Gon, Gon has just had his curiosity ignited. Basically, he wants to figure out what it is about being a hunter that is so great that his father would do that instead of being a dad, which is optimism at its height, I guess.
Yeah.
They just finished playing a game that was called Greed Island, which is a lot more complicated than what that makes it sound like. So if you want to hear all about that, we have covered the entire Greed Island arc. That game was created by his dad and seems to have been created with the almost sole purpose to challenge and train his son, Gon, with the expectation that Gon would be the first person to beat it, which he was. They just won. They were able to take some cards from the game out into the real world and use them. One of the cards, Gon figured out a way to sort of play a technicality in the rules to his favor so that he was able to bring basically a magic spell out of the game with him. That spell is called Accompany, which allows you and anyone within a certain radius of you to transport to the location of a person that you have met before. They found a name. We're going to have to talk about this at the beginning of episode 76. Because they address it really head on at the start of this episode. That basically they found a name that they have realized is Gon's father Jing's name with some of the letters rearranged in a really uncomfortable way for us American watchers. And they have transported to this person. They arrived there at the end of our previous Hunter x Hunter coverage, and that's where we pick up today with episode 76.
Yeah, so episode 76 is going to be called Reunion X and X Understanding. So they are going to show up and meet this person who is the rearranged letters of Jing's name attached to him, and it turns out to not be Jing, but a different character that we are going to find out is named Kite. And so
also they say it and they write it on screen like three times at least, and it's so hilarious and uncomfortable, and I'm really glad when they stop talking about this fucking name rearrangement.
Yeah, so it's not great.
I mean, it's so nothing in Japanese as far as I can tell, but it doesn't translate very well.
Yeah. So the next thing that is going to happen is that they're going to start to walk up on Kite. So we don't know who he is. We think originally he is going to be Jing. But before they are able to ask him any questions about what's going on, he jumps over to them very, very fast. He knocks both of them on the ground. Then he uses his ability, which decides to tell itself to everybody exactly what it is and what it's
about. I have a slot machine in my mouth.
Yeah, I have a slot machine in my mouth! And so what the slot machine does is he spins through a couple of numbers, 1 through 10. Whatever number he lands on, he transforms into the weapon of that number that's attached to that number, which happens to be 4 this time. The number 4 is a machine gun that appears in Kite's hand, and Kite starts to fire what looks like at Gon and Killua, who are on the ground. Gon is going to go jump and dive in front of Killua, or maybe knock him out of the way, and instead of shooting at them, he is actually shooting at these ants, these like big ass ants that are like crawling all around.
They're like,
and he basically,
they're ant sized, but like like rainforest ants, not like, you know, sidewalk in the city ants.
Yeah, if you've ever heard of a like a bullet ant or or something of like that size, they're a little bit larger than that. They're like big gross ants. The reason why we keep on talking about this so much is because this entire arc is actually based around these kind of ants. They are called chimera ants, and they are going to be both the interesting, cool part and also the fucking most obnoxious thing in the show going forward.
This is, spoiler alert for the coverage of this arc, which is going to take us a really long time because this arc is really long. Mm-hmm. I don't like this arc.
Yeah. I like it more than Blake likes it, but one of my biggest problems with it is that it takes the show into a direction that it has never been in before, which is big, explosive, crazy, powerful fights out of nowhere. It removes a little bit of, like, the earnedness of it, but we're not going to actually get to the part of that.
You know,
until a little bit later.
The problem for me, and I have some notes in here about this later, but it's a huge tonal shift. And it's a tonal shift to a type of story that I have a really hard time with. So it's sort of, I'm sort of like predisposed not to like this type of story as much anyways. And it's the type of story. So like for Hunter x Hunter, I appreciate that each arc is kind of doing its own thing. And they feel different and they have different objectives, and that's cool. This one is just not a feeling that I enjoy, and it goes on for a really long time. It also is going to have major pacing problems as we progress. That's not the case right now, but as you get near the end, it feels like the end will never come, and we'll get there when we get there and then have to be there forever. Right now, these are good episodes. They're really good at building tension, but it also is going to start to have some of those elements that I don't like in a little bit. So I guess we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. So the next thing that is going to happen inside of this episode is that we are going to take a hard left turn and go into a cave. This cave has a gigantic, horrible looking monster ant creature who is eating just all the fish.
Every and fish the bats. She can find.
She's
gross too. She has like, it seems like she has legs and arms like a human instead of the six sort of equivalent legs like an ant would have. And she's also massive. She seems to be human sized or maybe bigger. It's hard to tell because she's not put up against anything that has a specific height. But she looks large, and she's eating these fish. And what's interesting is they cut back to this a couple of times, and the second time we see this, so the first time she eats the fish, she's like, damn, these fish are dope. And then the second time, she is fishing. So it's sort of subtly showing you that she's, like, learning how to more efficiently catch prey, and that is, like, the whole thing that she's doing. She's always catching things and eating them.
Yeah. So one of the things that is going to be revealed inside of this episode is that Kite is we're going to return back to Kite talking to Gon and Killua. We are going to find out that this is not actually the first time that Kite ever met Gon. Because as soon as he sees Kite's face, Gon remembers back to when he was a kid, and he was like, where have I heard it before? Because Kite says, it's a shame that I had to kill another thing. Because Kite doesn't like to hurt any sort of animals. Even if the animals are very dangerous, he doesn't enjoy it, because one of the things that they will say over and over again in these three episodes is that if you are a good hunter and meant to be a good hunter, you are usually well-liked by people and also animals. So a lot of times these animals will sort of gravitate towards good hunters, which tend to be like better people a lot of time as well. So Kite remembers and Gon remembers. I can't remember. They're all at the same time. When Gon was a little kid on Whale Island, he was, I think he was like playing or something, and he got too close to this cub. That
it was basically like a, stumbles like a, on a cub in the forest. It's functionally a bear. Which it's if like you a stumble tiger. On a bear cub and the mama bear is nearby, you are fully fucked. This is the same situation.
He is about to be straight up murdered by this mama bear tiger thing, and Kite has to come along and murder the bear. Before he leaves, he just punches Gon, and he's just like,
"Yeah,
you should pay attention next time."
He's like, "Hey, random young child that I met in the woods, papa."
Yeah. And he's just like, you should know better than to go around this baby, because if you're around the baby, the mom's probably going to be around. And it's going to attack you. And because it was going to attack you and I didn't want you to die, I had to kill it. So it wasn't its fault. It was your fault that this thing had to die, yeah. Which is a really cool lesson to come about inside of this. And also like a quick aside to our friends inside of the world. Be nice to animals. Like,
yeah.
One of the biggest problems
in real life. Don't be a dick to animals. That makes you a bad person. Like,
I heard this story on the news about how they were just like, we're having to kill all these wolves because these wolves are, you know, they're going to attack us while we're going into the forest and hunting deer. And I'm just like, yeah, you're going into their habitat. Their
house.
Yes. Like, you broke into their house and they came after you. And also, they don't want to hurt you, but they're also hunting that same deer. So you're just a fellow hunter aside them. I have a problem with it. It's one of the things that irks me the most is just like, well, yeah, we had to keep on cutting down this forest. And it's just like, you didn't, though.
You didn't. Like, sometimes things happen. Sometimes you need to control a population. I understand that. But like,
yeah,
that's not the same thing. And don't be a dick.
Yeah. Anyways, we are going to be pretty much given a complete backstory on everything you actually need to know about Kite after this, which is that when he was a little kid, he was on the streets, you know, as you always are if you have any tragic backstory in the show.
That's where kids come from, I think, is the streets.
Yeah. Also, if you've ever met Jing before, you came from the streets.
And he is a good person, and we know that because all of his friends are dogs. And one bird and one horse. But mostly dogs.
Yeah. Also, like, he's just gonna give bread to that horse. That's not what horses eat.
Horses don't want bread. They don't. My dog wants bread, but horses don't want bread.
They want carrots. They want exclusively apples, carrots and grass. And
maybe
apples.
A sugar cube if you're getting crazy.
Yeah. Anyways, we are going to see that Jing was actually watching Kite as a boy run through the streets, and when he finds Kite's hideout, which is in the sewers, it turns out that Kite was bringing home this loaf of bread so that he could feed all of his friends, which are a bunch of dogs and a horse. And
that Jing bird, but he's like, not in the sewers. I don't know what happened with the bird.
And so he's like, you must be a good person because you're friends with all these animals, said both of them to each other. And then and then Jing teaches Kite how to become a hunter by using his Nen. And then Jing is just like, oh, by the way, bye. And he just like leaves.
Yeah, and so he's going to tell us, we're not going to see this part in flashbacks, but he goes through the hunter exam, and he accomplishes it, and he says that he accomplishes it with fairly little difficulty, which is impressive. And then he explains to them that Jing set another task for him before he would recognize Kite. Not necessarily as a hunter, but, you know, just recognize him, which is a very Japanese thing, but I think it translates fairly well to America as well. Or I guess the West, since we're not all Americans that listen to this show. So, so he wants to recognize Kite, and in order to do so, Kite has to find him. And Jing is nowhere to be found, and it's a big process that Kite ultimately accomplishes. And I really like this, because that's pretty much exactly what Jing is doing with Gon. And it is, for Kite, explicitly a part of his hunter exam, sort of an extension on that, to sort of prove that he is able to do this task that's even harder than the exam. And basically is like, you know, you're at a higher level, or I have a higher standards for you. And so I like that, and I like that Jing has that, and that we can therefore infer that Jing is doing that for Gon. Although I realized in this episode, I don't like Jing. I think that he's a bad dad. I think that he chose poorly, and he's not doing a very good job of justifying being an absentee father. And also, he says that thing about how his kid having friends would mean that his kid was weak. And that's fucked up.
Yeah, he has a lot of problems with people.
Jing, there's also the moment when Kite finds him, and we see that moment. And Jing confirms that Gon was the kid that he found and that that is his son, and then thanks him for punching him, which is a little horrifying for us in the West, but I am aware that parenting and physical, like, rebukings and stuff like that, like hitting your kid, is kind of the norm in Japanese. And being standoffish and sort of cold to your children is a sort of Japanese cultural thing. So I think this is less upsetting in its original culture than it is for us.
Yeah, I would say here, though, that, like, you know, not everybody is the same. And
yeah, for sure.
You know, all parenting styles are different, and all different, you know, different cultures are going to be different, and they raise kids differently. So, I mean, like, I, you know, we're not ones to judge, but or even completely know other people's parenting styles in other countries. So whatever, to each their own. But we're saying in this scenario that Jing is not a very good dad.
He's a dick.
Yeah. So Jing reveals also in a flashback moment, which is going to be a really weird one. We cut back to the game that they were just playing in Green Island, and the robot
Nurse Joy is sitting there.
Whatever her name, and she is also reminiscing about how Jing came back, and he was like, if he uses this one card, it'll take him to me, but if he uses this other card called a company, that means he has friends, and he's weak, and he doesn't need to come around me.
Yeah.
And then, like, the nurse lady is just like, Jing, you don't have to show off because other people are around, and he's just like, shut up, don't talk to me!
You're not my dad!
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like... It's this whole thing where, like, I don't want my kid to come here with his friends, because he is attributing that as a sign of weakness. Basically, that would mean that Gon did not feel he could face his father without having someone there to support him. And that's not Gon, and that's not why he wanted to bring Killua with him. And so it's frustrating, because it's like, you did this for a reason that's sort of fucked up on its face, but that also ultimately turned out not to be accurate to this person. And now you basically have ruined it and also put your kid in this really horrible situation that we're going to get into right now.
Yeah. So the other thing that is going to be happening, and we're going to be revealed to, is that this big giant ant that is going to be inside of a cave reveals herself to be the queen of the ants, and she says that she's living for a purpose, which is to give birth to the king of the ants, and then she's going to eat some more things and be gross. We're going to go into episode 77, Unease X and Exciting. This one introduces us to four of the most useless and never talked about characters in the show.
But their names, though.
Their names are super dumb. I didn't write down all
of
their
names, but one of them is named Stick Dinner.
Yeah, so...
And he's the cook, and he makes a joke about it because his last name is Dinner, and I kind of appreciate that he's self-aware about how ridiculous that is, but it doesn't excuse how ridiculous that is. And then another one of them is literally named Banana.
Okay. Anyways, we're also glossing over the fact that the leader of this is his expedition team, and he, as the leader of the team, is named Kite. So, like, you gotta also realize that this character that we are going to really love also has a dumbass name.
Also,
but anyways, that
one of them is like a bear. He's like
a bear. No, he's not. He's just a furry. He's like just
a man. He's bear pig.
No, bullshit. He's just doing that with his hair. It's a hairstyle.
I think he's a bear. Look at his mouth.
He's just a guy that's really into dressing up like bears. And just some people are like that, Blake. Some people just like to dress up like bears.
I just think that you're wrong. I think this is like when the police chief in My Hero Academia is a guy with a dog's head. I think it's that shit right there. So anyways.
Or he's a chimera ant that's secretly in disguise. Yeah.
Like, been undercover the whole time.
So, anyways,
Ant Queen starts to catch some bats in addition to all the fish that she's eating. And pretty much concurrently with that, Kite is going to explain something called phagogenesis. I don't know. I think it's a made-up word because Google thinks it's a misspelling and doesn't have a good suggestion. And they say something else in Japanese, so I don't know how to pronounce it in English. But basically, the idea is that this species replicates by having the one queen who gives birth to, you know, the colony, which is pretty similar to ants. But phagogenesis is like when you eat, when you consume something, you can pass on the traits of that thing to your offspring. And if you consume multiple things, you can pass off multiple traits onto that offspring. And so what this means is that every time she eats one of these fish or one of these bats, she gives her offspring the chance to have, I don't know, gills or scales or wings, stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, like, I don't know if it's just kind of like it's just kind of like an easy way to explain how they're going to move up in power so fast and also, like, learn all these different things and connect all these different things just so that you can have this, like, crazy army that's coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, but I really like the iterative nature of this, but the sort of inevitable result of that is one of the aspects that I super don't like, and Killua is going to put his finger on it right now, because they have a specimen from the queen. She is missing an arm, and that arm was discovered by someone, and Kite and his team have a piece of that arm for study, and Killua realizes that that arm means that the rest of the creature must be a certain amount of size, and that if it is truly that size, it could eat a human.
Yeah, so what he says is it's specifically 2 meters at least, which is 6.5 feet. So that is going to be a very big creature, and it could easily consume a human, which is going to worry Kite, and he is going to think back to when they were breaking down, figuring out what was going on with this. They are going to do a lot of science-y flashbacks and callbacks inside of this episode. They're going to be revealed to be, like, you know, people that are spending a lot of time breaking down what kind of animals are out inside of the world and breaking out, kind of think of them as like, I can never remember the name of like anthropologists, where they just like, they go out and they take like different pieces and bring it back so that they can understand and catalog all of the different animal species that are all over the planet. And it turns out that his research team, including Kite, are so good that he was like, you've helped us, you know, considerably, like 200 years of research has been done in immediately really short amount of time, because they are so efficient. And so they are going to take the specimen and find out relatively quickly, that, this specimen, is almost 99% of a chimera ant. And the last part of it that they don't know, we are going to start to figure out as, the queen is giving birth to these, like, baby chimera ants, which are actually fully formed giant monster creatures that are mixed with these other species, that she is probably closer to having, like, human aspects. Because when you see her, she has, like, the, you know, she is, you know, bipedal. She has, like, you know, hands of a person. She talks about how, like,
like a xenomorph.
Yeah, kind of. I would say that she would be closer to, like, the, you know, whatever the fuck they're called from, from Animorphs, the
Hork-Bajir?
Yes. You know the name of it.
Yes. I am reading Animorphs right now. It's dope. So, if you'd like to talk about Animorphs with me, I am on Reddit. So, the monsters that she births, I like this aspect of the chimera ants because they, like I said, they take on the traits of whatever she eats. And when they're explaining it, you see these ants that have, like, they eat they eat like an insect and they have that insect's features. They'll grow wings because she ate a winged insect and stuff like that. But how it actually manifests in the show is that it's basically humanoid animals, and then their joints and stuff are sort of like insectoids. So they're, you know, their arms are jointed and seem to be covered in exoskeleton, or they have like the little bug-like finger claws instead of regular fingers, or, you know, the extremities that you might expect from whatever creature they come from. So they have like insectoid inspired features, but they are mostly humanoid animals. And so you'll see like they're less humanoid right now, but you see like a giant crab monster, and there's like a bat thing, and she's like, y'all need to go out and get me some food. So they gotta find some food.
She says it just like that, too.
That's exactly what she says. This is a Japanese
y'all show. Get me some food.
Y'all need to go out and get me some food.
Okay, so what she is going to specifically watch, she isn't 100% sure of. She just knows that she needs something that is going to be more satiating and more nutritious than what she is eating right now.
Keep eating all these damn fish and bats.
Yeah, so what it turns out... What it turns out she actually wants is she wants to eat people. Specifically, she gets a taste for eating people from eating these two children who have just the most sad story in the show.
This is the point at which I stopped liking Hunter x Hunter the first time I watched it, because I was like, it's like the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah.
That has forever tainted the series, and I respect that it happened and that he wrote that, and I think it's a great story beat, but I just don't like it. It viscerally upsets me, and I have never recovered, and it has tainted the series going forward. And this is the same thing. You were introduced to these like very cute, likable kid characters. They spent like 10 minutes of the episode on them and just on getting to know them and being very endearing, and then they are killed by being eaten alive.
Yeah.
And I don't like that trope at all. And especially here, they play on your emotions, and it really fucking rankles me. And I know that means it's successful, but I don't like it. And this entire arc is based on that. And it is strike one for this arc, which is also going to have several other strikes.
Yeah, so the other thing that this is going to reveal is that the chimera ants are, once they eat a human, they are able to start picking up different, more powerful human traits. One of them is being more thoughtful, understanding like different things like, you know, love and emotion, and understanding like at least human speech, which is going to start to play like a little bit of a important thing in the next episode. And then it's just going to not be a super important thing. So don't worry about it.
It's like a turning point for the Chimera Ant Society. And then they turn that point and it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, they're like, you know, remember that thing that we told you to worry about? Don't worry about it anymore.
There is something important that I think we forgot to mention that I think is relevant to this moment here. They have just eaten some humans, and the queen now has a taste for human flesh. And what we learned earlier in the episode is that chimera ants are a very dangerous species for this exact reason, because of the phagogenesis or whatever, however you pronounce it. And they are able to take on these traits of whatever they eat, but they also have a voracious appetite. Well, specifically the queen does. And when they find a species that they like, they can eat it into extinction. And so the problem that Kite and his team are trying to stop, which unbeknownst to them is exactly what's happening, is that there might be a chimera ant queen large enough to devour a human, that it would then get the taste for human flesh and possibly pose a risk to the entire human species.
Yeah. Which, spoiler alert, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, so she is going to eat these children, you know, be a complete monster. And we are going to get one of our most annoying characters, which is this winged cherub chimera ant. This character
Did you say most annoying characters?
Yeah, I don't like this character.
That's surprising. I disagree that he's annoying, but I do think that he is a setup for something that doesn't have any payoff.
Yeah, I don't like this character, but that's
so me. Basically, this is the first humanoid chimera ant that was born as a result of those two adorable children being eaten, and it is unstated but fairly clear that this is the kids, like,
yeah,
and that there is some connection to the life that he had previously, sort of like stored in his DNA. And that's going to be a theme that's underexplored in this arc, but that does come up from time to time.
Yeah. So this is going to lead into the next episode, which is going to be Very X Rapid X Reproduction. This is when the Chimera Ant takes a hard, hard turn. And by turn, I mean turn up the pressure of how fast they are going to move from one step of the chain to, like, 50 steps down the chain. She is going to go from not having an army to having a massive army, have created all of the different monster characters that you are going to meet basically throughout the rest of this arc.
There's going to be a few more, but there's a lot of recognizable faces here.
Yeah.
Including some in the background where I was like, wait, that's not a background character.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, like, yeah, oh, they, like that happened way faster than I remembered it.
Also, they really should have called this episode Humans X R X Meat, because that's what this episode is.
So, the main points that are going to happen inside of this episode are all going to happen with the Chimera Ants. Our main characters at this time, Kite, and Gon and Killua, basically their entire story is just going to be them looking around, and not finding anything.
Yeah, they'll find something near the end. Well, I guess we can cover it near the end of the episode. It's interspersed.
Yeah, it's not really... it's basically they're looking for people that have gone missing because they figured out, like, you know, Kite's worst fears have been recognized, but they need to figure out where they might have turned up. So they keep on doing sleuthing and they find out that they must be on this part of a continent.
Yeah, they figure it out because they know the location where the Chimera Ant Queen's arm was found. Yeah. And it washed up on a beach. And so they're looking at, like, tidal data to figure out where it could have been, like, if it had fallen into the waters, how could it have washed up on this shore? And using that, they sort of deduce that it might be in this island chain, which is correct, we know from the narration. But the island chain has a problem, which is that it's part of the NGL, which is an acronym that... I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's basically people who have rejected modern technology on pain of death. Like, they live in a sort of society that rejects technology, and if you bring technology into their territory, they will execute you. It is a capital offense. Yeah. As such, the team realizes that this section of the world is very insular. They don't have the technology, so therefore they cannot communicate quickly or efficiently. If they were to send a note about Chimera Ant invasion or attacks or whatever, it would probably not get to anybody in time for the Hunters Association to help. In addition, they're looking at a missing persons database, and this country or region or whatever it is would not use that because they have rejected those kinds of things and they're doing their own thing. And they realize, like, this is probably where this arm came from, and we wouldn't be able to find the things we've been looking for that might indicate otherwise a Chimera Ant invasion because of the particular place where this is happening. So they get ready to head off in that direction.
Yeah, so that is all that is going to be happening with our main characters.
Yeah, there's a tag that we'll address at the end.
Yeah, The rest is happening with just the Chimera ants, which are going to develop very quickly their own personalities. Very
rapid reproduction, some might
say. Yeah, you're so funny.
I am, thank you.
So it turns out that they're going to develop, like, rivalries between these different leaders of, like, the different troop corps, and they're going to try to compete with each other to see who can kill the most humans and bring the most humans back to mom. And
well, one of them's trying to compete, and the other one is like, I'm not competing with you.
Yeah. the biggest problem that I kind of ran into when reading over these is just, like, I had forgotten how much of, like, this very start, they just, like, don't know anything about the human species at all. And, yeah. I mean, like, that should have been kind of obvious, but they spend a lot of time learning about them. And then it turns out, like, this penguin bastard is just, like, he is very... He apparently read all of the books, like, on Cliff Notes, because he is super well-read and knows everything about humankind after, like, a day of reading.
Yeah.
And then it also, the other thing is, like, the turtle guy, who is, like, leading his corps, he's just like, we're gonna come take all your people, and they just, like, jump, yeah, they jump out with, like, an army full of people with machine guns, and they just get murdered, and he's just like, oh no! And then he just, like, straight up Ninja Turtles his way out of the situation by, like,
yeah,
rolling on his side out of there, and I'm just like... What?
I really like this aspect of this arc where, like, they are at an advantage because they are mysterious and monstrous and very powerful, and they are completely without compunction about killing, but they are also totally ignorant of the ways of human society, but they have, like, the ability to read and speak, and they have these very human traits because they're getting it through this this, you know, birthing process that the Chimera ants have. And so I like the aspect of them not knowing, like, they get attacked, these people shoot the ants with guns, and then later on the old man turtle is like, what was that? And the penguin dude is like, I think it was this thing called guns, and they talk about it, and it's like, I like that. I like them figuring it out, and it kind of fits with the iterative growth nature of the Chimera ants. And I do like that aspect. I just don't like the people being eaten alive aspect.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's just like, it's one of those, like, I think the closest thing that I can relate it to is probably going to be, like, how some people are completely turned off entirely by Attack on Titans, and yeah, them eating people.
I like Attack on Titan because it's a good story, but I have a hard time watching it for that exact reason.
Yeah, and that's the same thing, too, with, like, some people that I've talked to, they can't watch The Walking Dead. And the reason why they can't is because they can't deal with zombie stories. Because it just grosses them out so much to see this, like, you know, horrible side.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, I don't like slasher flicks. And I know that some people really like slasher movies. I like horror movies, but not slasher movies. Because with horror movies, bad things might happen, but I'm there to enjoy, like, the dread. I'm there to enjoy, like, maybe some jump scares, and I like a lot of supernatural elements, so I enjoy that. But with a slasher movie, it really replaces a lot of the supernatural elements, and I would argue for a lot of slasher movies, a lot of the dread, with just the gore and violence and, like, how gross or how badly hurt can this person be? And I am not into that kind of thing. And I think this arc, because of the way that the Chimera ants are by their design created and set up, it sort of inevitably moves in that direction, which for me is unfortunate because I don't like that direction. So I have to, like, wade my way through it. It has other problems, I think, with the writing that we will encounter later on. It's been a while since I've watched it, but I suspect that I will be vindicated in this opinion instead of changed. And we'll address that when we get there. It's not there yet.
Yeah. So the other thing that is going to happen inside of this episode with the Chimera ants is that she is going to have built this like giant tower castle thing.
Yeah, like between scenes.
So she is going to have built this gigantic tower, birthed all of the different things that you need to know about, including her elite guard that are going to end up taking care of her later on.
But they haven't been birthed yet, but they're incubating. And this happened so fast. Like, it happened faster maybe than we've given it credit for, because we didn't see this happen. She used to be living in a cave by the beach, and now she is living in a giant, like, ant hill in the middle of a forest. Like, this happened real quick to have not been addressed on screen.
Yeah, and also, like, nobody saw this.
Which, I guess, like, we are led to believe that the NGL is a very large area with a very sparse population and, of course, no technology, so they're not, like, doing satellite images or whatever, but, like, damn, y'all.
Yeah. Like, nobody had a conversation via, like, Messenger at all. Like, yeah. You know.
Shit, whatever. Did you check somebody's Facebook status? Fuck.
Anyways, the last thing that is going to happen inside of this episode, well, not the last thing, one of the other things that is going to happen inside of this episode, is that we are going to be, shown that they, number one, know that there's an army, like, their army of Chimera ants. It is led by a, like, dictatorship or a, some sort of,
It seems like a drug lord or something.
And yeah,
the ants are they're like, is it possible that the humans could have an army? I mean, we do, but like this other species, could they also? And I'm like, yeah.
Yes. Everybody already knows this.
Yeah. You've eaten like 1,000 people who are aware of this.
Yeah, like, you know, you've learned how to speak in a day. Like, how do you not already know this?
You understand the word army and the concept behind it, but not that other people might also do this thing.
Yeah, question mark, question mark, question mark.
Yeah, whatever.
Step one, do a thing. Step three, get money. Question mark, question mark in the center. So they are going to also want names, which is going to be a really important part of this that I didn't remember being a really important part of this.
And I also really liked that part where they're like, hey, yeah, we're kind of individuals and we would like to name ourselves. And the queen's like, what's a name? And they're like, it's like a code to tell you who's who. And she's like, yeah, do whatever the fuck you want. Just don't bother me.
And then she's just like, for my royal guards, I will give you names. And I'm just like,
she gives them the most random ass fucking names.
I'm like, you can't be bothered to name your other children, but you're like, I like these three the best.
I think she's going to end up naming them, and then the king eventually, I think she names him as well, but I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyways. The last thing that is going to happen in this episode is going to be them just kind of chatting about how, like, I don't know how to explain this thing.
Okay,
about
so
the drugs.
They realize that there are drugs coming out of the NGL and that this has something to do with, like people getting in or something like that. And they decide to go there. And so Kite and his team are going. Gon and Killua have been hanging out with Kite and his team. And Kite's like, are you guys sure that you want to come with us here? It's going to be very dangerous. And they're like, yeah, we understand. We're fine. And he's like, okay, but like, here's the thing. There might be something happening that I need to attend to. Like, I am not, my number one priority is not necessarily going to be your safety at all times. Like, obviously I'll keep you safe if I can. But there's other stuff that might happen that might preclude that. So if you're coming, you have to be able to take care of yourselves. And like, we can take care of ourselves. And then he's like, here's the other deal. If I am in danger, you need to prioritize escape. Like, not helping me, not getting involved. You need to get away. And they're like, okay. And then later on, you see them on the airship on the way to this place. And they're having, like, Gon and Killua are having a private conversation with each other. And Killua, Gon's like, I don't like that. I don't know if I can do it. And Killua's like, of course you can't do it. You're not the kind of person who can leave somebody like in danger and save yourself. That's not you. And Gon's like, well, what would you do? And Killua's like, I don't know. I can't be asked to think about hypothetical situations.
which is a very Killua way to answer things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's just like, I'll make the decision when I have to make the decision is sort of Killua's response to those kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he can't be bothered.
Yeah. And I guess that's it for the week. It's really a lot of setup, and it's good setup. I complained a lot because I want to stress that at least at this part of the story, it is the type of story that I don't like personally, not a type of story that is bad.
Yeah.
And
anyways,
it's told well. Also, isn't it weird that this is the week where I stop liking Hunter x Hunter just after the week where I surprise start liking JoJo's Bizarre Adventure?
Who have you become?
What's happening to me? Well, at least next week we have a show that we both like.
Yeah. What if, like, you were getting to the end of the episode and you're just like, I'm starting to not like Hunter x Hunter. And I was just like, et tu, Brute!
Yeah. I mean, at least this time for this show, we've both watched it all the way through. And we already knew that I didn't like this arc.
Yeah. Anyways, stick with us. We're going to talk about what's going on next week instead of our credits.
What is going on next week? Who now? Who knows?
Yeah.
Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is made by Forever Summer Productions.
With sound editing done by Rashad English of Plain English Productions.
He's our level 6 sound wizard.
Level up. Our podcast is ad-free, and we want to keep it that way. If you want to keep it that way too, please consider supporting us on Patreon.
Follow us on Twitter at @BSGetJumped.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BlakeAndSpencerGetJumped.
Or talk to us on Reddit at reddit.com/r/GetJumped.
If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. Reviews help other listeners find our show.
New episodes come out every Sunday
on iTunes,
Google Play,
Stitcher,
Buzzsprout,
or wherever you get your podcast from.
And hey, thanks for listening. Next week on Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, we're watching Soul Eater episodes 12 through 14, where Soul is having bad dreams, he and Maka have to learn to work together again, and then the funny test episode.
Yeah, if you want to combine them all together into a weird experience that we all had as a shared child, remember when you used to have, like, waking dreams when you would fall asleep in a test in class, and your, like, brain is awake, but your body won't move, and you're just like, this is it, I'm paralyzed.
Or, like, when you have the dream of the test, and then you wake up and you're like, fuck, I haven't even taken the test. That's next week. That's next week.